The latest technology.
The perfect must-have for every golfer.
The coolest trends.
Oh, gnarly!
Insight from the hottest talent and industry insiders.
Sometimes par is good enough to win.
The South Shore's only golf show on the radio. This is Goldie Belt's Golf Live.
It's in the hole!
Here's your host, Liza Churchill.
Welcome to Goldie Bounce Golf. I'm your host, Liza Churchill. We're coming to you live from the lovely South Shore studios of 95.9 WATD. Tonight we have a very fun show. I've got a guest caddy joining me in studio, United States Challenge Cup Junior Golf Foundation member, John Beadle.
Hey, thanks very much for having me on the show.
You are a junior golfer in our area.
Yes.
How long have you been golfing for?
7 years now, almost 8.
Really? And you're in high school? Where do you go to high school?
The Noble and Greeno School in Dedham. I'm a freshman.
Oh, yeah? Now, how's your freshman year in high school been?
Everything's been going great. There's a lot of incredible teachers there, and I've found some great mentors.
Oh, all right. Now, has the golf season started yet?
No, we're actually playing this spring. We have tryouts on Wednesday.
This Wednesday? Wow, in 2 days, or 3 days?
Yeah.
Oh, how many kids are trying out, do you know?
It'll probably be about 15 or 16 for 8 spots.
And what schools do you play that are around there? There's a lot of prep schools around there?
Yeah, we compete in an athletic league called the Independent School League, and we face schools like BBNN. Our historic rival is Milton Academy, and there's a bunch of schools around there.
Oh, all right. Do you guys play at Granite Links or anything up there?
Dedham Country and Polo Club.
Did you start out with the First Tee program of Massachusetts?
Yes, I did. I've had some great experiences with them. They play at MGA Links at Mammon Capit, which is really close to TPC. Joe McCabe and Pete Walsh, who have been great friends to me, head the program.
Tell me a little bit about the United States Challenge Cup Junior Golf Foundation. Isn't that a mouthful?
It is a mouthful. Yeah, Dave Adamonis runs it. He's incredible. His dad created the foundation many years ago as one high school tournament at Alpine Country Club, and it's evolved into one of the premier junior tours in the country. There's now tournaments in every New England state except Vermont, and two tournaments in New York at Eisenhower Red Golf Course and at Bethpage, which is one of the best tournaments of the year. Dave's been a great mentor and a great friend over many years.
And his brother Brad, is he on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, he is. I think he's competing on the Nationwide Tour this year. He actually finished runner-up at a PGA Tour event, I think 2 years ago.
They're good guys.
Yeah, they're great.
They're really good guys. They've done a lot for junior golf.
Yeah, they really have. Dave is Dave and his father are responsible for all of the playing privileges that we have now as junior golfers in New England.
So, out of the tournaments, what's the most exciting one that you've gone to? I know you've traveled extensively.
Yeah, I have. I've been really fortunate in that respect. But I would say the DBC Cup on Labor Day.
So that's affiliated with the Deutsche Bank Championship.
Yeah, it is. It's really a dream weekend. Mr. Waugh came up with the idea several years ago, which it was very small at that, and it's evolved into the highlight of mine and many other junior golfers' seasons. 16 players from New England are invited, and they face 16 players from the rest of the United States. Dave Adamonis captains Team New England, and Steve Feinstein, who's a fixture of junior golf around here, captains Team USA. Over 2 days, we play best ball matches in match play.
So it's like a mini Deutsche Bank for the juniors.
Yeah, it's almost like a Ryder Cup, which is very cool.
And don't you guys have something to do with the Pro-Am at the Deutsche Bank Championship?
We do. State Street Bank gives Dave their foursome every year, and they allow four kids from the Challenge Cup to play with a professional in the Pro-Am. And it's been a great success. The juniors have won with the pro the last 2 years that they've done it. Camillo did it 2 years ago, and this past year it was Anthony Kim.
Now, what did you think of AK? Were you there?
I was. I walked around with Dave. A friend of mine, Ben Balter, played with Megan Kang, Will Dixon, and Juliet Fong Fumi were the four juniors that played, and I walked inside the ropes with Dave and AK.
Isn't it exciting to walk inside the ropes?
It really is. To be so close to all the players is incredible.
It's amazing. At this year's Deutsche Bank, I got to walk inside the ropes, and I followed Tiger Woods.
Wow.
During the last day, or last couple days. That was really exciting. And Ernie Els, he's a big boy.
He is.
He is tall.
The big easy.
He is. It was amazing with all the fans. And
it's really crazy over there. A lot of them look much bigger in person than they do on TV, especially Tiger.
And all the photographers snapping pictures, too.
Yeah, Tiger doesn't get happy a lot with that.
as they swing. Did you see the lawsuit that John Daly's trying to, I think it was the Honda.
No,
he's
I haven't
trying
seen
to
it.
Sue the Honda because he claims that in his backswing a couple of years ago, I mean, seriously, it was a couple of years ago that someone was taking a photograph, so it tweaked his back, and he's had back problems ever since.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know. I don't know what you think about that.
I don't.
So what else can we talk about? We have two very special guests, the creators of the Stack and Tilt Golf Swing. They'll be calling in from Florida in a couple minutes, Mike Bennett and Andy Plummer. That should be exciting.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Do you know anything about their method of swing technology?
It seems like the biggest principle of their method is stacking your weight on your left side throughout the whole swing, which makes purer contact.
Well, that's what they say, that it keeps the contact the same shot after shot.
I've never tried it, but it seems like it's worked for a lot of people.
I think so. We'll see, right? We'll see what they have to say about it.
I'm looking forward to talking to them.
I think so, too. What else is going on?
We had the MGA Salute to the Champions dinner a few weeks ago at Wellesley Country Club.
Did you win any awards?
I did. I get to go up and give a speech to the group after I won the pre-junior division of the Mass Junior this year, which was really cool. There were about 280 people there. I got to see a lot of old friends from the MGA, and a lot of great champions were there.
Definitely. And who was the speaker?
Mike Dowling was the MC, which
was
really cool.
I think he was there last year.
Yeah, I've been watching him for a long time on TV.
He's really nice.
Yeah, he is really nice.
He's very nice. Laid back.
He is really laid back. You're right.
It's the only way to fly, John. So now that you're young, just keep that in mind. The season coming up, when does your season with the Challenge Cup start?
Sure. The Junior Match Play Tournament, which is great, is March 26th.
Oh, wow,
is
that's
the
coming
qualifying.
Up.
So hopefully we get enough melting so that that can happen on time. And we have about usually five rounds, and the final round is at Wanamoisit, which is a real highlight. And most of the juniors around New England play in that tournament. That's one of the biggest tournaments all year.
So do the ladies and the gents play together, or is it separate?
No, it's always separate.
All right.
It's usually a girls' open field, and then they have a boys either 13 and under or 14 and under, and then an older division, and sometimes two older divisions.
How many tournaments are there through the season? Did you tell me already?
I think it's close to 30 tournaments. Dave set up a lot. It's really impressive.
I think so. A couple years ago, I believe the First Tee of Massachusetts, they have the Golf Channel tournament.
Yes, they do.
You guys went down there for that?
We did. That was great. We actually ended up winning it, which was really cool.
How many teams are there at an event like that?
That time, I think there were close to 15 or 16 teams, which was a lot of fun. And then the day after, we got to play in a Junior Am, I think it was called, and we played with four business executives, which was really cool.
All right. When you won your event down there at the First Tee, did they have a trophy or anything for you guys?
We did. We actually got a Waterford trophy, which was very cool. Each one of us did. It was called the Shell Chapter Challenge, so it was in the shape of the shell.
Like the Shell
gas station?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was really cool.
Well, that's cool. Now, how many trophies do you have on your mantle at home?
I have a good little collection now.
All right.
Hopefully I'll be able to expand on it in the future.
Oh, definitely. So do you have any friends listening to you making your debut on live radio?
I do have a few friends listening. I'll give a shout out to my English teacher, Mr. Burr. Pete Walsh is listening, who is one of the heads of the First Tee program. My advisor at school, Mr. Henry Kynard, and a friend at school, Thomas Sewell.
And I'd like to give a shout out to your golf coach, because you need to make the golf team there.
Mr. Kovacs.
Up next, it's Michelle Anderson's Golf Fitness Tip of the Week.
You're not fit.
We just want to pop. Yeah.
Until you're golf fit.
Here's a killer chest workout you can do at home. All you need is a cheap set of dumbbells and a carpeted floor.
It's your golf fitness tip of the week.
What? Yeah. Be strong. Think strong.
With Michelle Anderson of Pilates Plus of Cape Cod.
This week we wrap up our series on neck stretches. I'm going to talk to you about stretches that you can do pre-game or any time during the day. We'll go right to the ear to shoulder stretch. Standing nice and tall, just a slight bend in your knees. Drop one ear towards your shoulder without raising the shoulder. And just hold the stretch. Keep breathing as you hold. Each time you exhale, relax into the stretch a little bit further. Bringing your head back to center, switch sides. And again, hold the stretch. Try to relax through the shoulders. keep breathing, inhale all the way and exhale all the way. And moving right into left and right, turning your head all the way to one side, hold, come back to center, switching sides, keep breathing, and do one more each side. Hold as long as you can. The longer you hold these stretches, the more the muscles will lengthen. The next stretch is the assisted diagonal neck stretch. So you're going to take your right hand behind your head and gently pull the head forward and to the right and hold. Reach down through your fingertips towards the floor and you'll feel that stretch lengthen all the way down your neck into the shoulder and even through your arm. Keep breathing and then switch sides. Into the neck rolls. Standing tall, bring your ear towards your shoulder and then gently roll your head forward really slowly. Try to get your chin to your chest and keep going until your opposite ear is towards the opposite shoulder. And repeat, always rolling the head forward, being very careful not to roll the head back. To see the video of this exercise, you can visit my website, www.pilatesplusofcapecod.com. This is Michelle Anderson.
You're listening to Goldie Bounce Golf Live on 95.9 WATD.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Liza Churchill. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. As we said, our guest this evening is the creator of the Stack and Tilt Golf Swing. Let's have a warm welcome for Mike Bennett. Oh, I guess it's Andy. Hi, is this Andy or Mike?
This is Andy right here. I think Mike's, if he's not in, he'll be coming in soon.
We're having a little problem with the phone lines this evening. All right. Andy, I guess it's going to be you for the evening.
No worries.
Tell me a little bit about the stack and tilt method.
Well, it's not really a method. It's more just a system of measurement of the swing and how to break it down so a student can isolate the offending pieces and they can implement whichever piece that applies to them. I would say it's not really something that you have to do all of, and I think people are led to believe that.
So the Stack and Tilt, we can find you online at stackandtiltgolfswing.com.
Yeah.
So I heard that Charlie Weiss stopped by your clinic yesterday at Iron Horse Country Club.
That's right. We have a lot of clinics that travel. Mike and I are on the road about 40 weeks a year. We have clinics in a lot of towns where tournaments are. And we have a couple of permanent sites, one of them here in Palm Beach area at Iron Horse Golf Club. And Charlie, a lot of times in town, when we're in town, the players that we coach will come out and hit balls with us on the weekend after they're playing. So yes, Charlie did put in an appearance yesterday. It's always good. I think a lot of students in the clinic enjoy watching the motion and the mechanics put into practice.
I think so too. Now, is Mike on the line?
I'm here.
All right, Mike. Thank you so much, Mike. We had some issues with the phones this evening.
No problem.
Okay. Well, that's okay. I can handle until you get him patched in, but I'd also like to say yes, question about a little bit more about stack and tilt. I'll go ahead and elaborate on that just a little bit more and try to clear it up for your listeners. We started out as players ourselves, and our intention really wasn't to become teachers, but along the way, we were fortunate to meet some very smart people who directed us and taught us how to measure and break down the swing, and that's exactly what we did. And in so doing, we isolated what we feel are the fundamentals or the basics, and I think what your listeners might understand is that we, or what I would like for them to take from this, is that we feel that the fundamentals in understanding golf are poorly communicated to beginning players. A lot of times the people who are new to the game are led to believe that the fundamentals are the grip, the stance, the posture, the alignment, and we make the point that those things are all variable, that it's really some other things that really are the basic elements of it.
We have a junior golfer in the studio with us this evening, John Beadle.
Hi, how are you?
Hi,
Mike,
John.
And Andy.
John's very excited to ask you guys some questions.
Great. Fire away, John.
Sure. So how do the stack and tilt principles apply to the short game?
Well, and you want me to take that?
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
First thing, John, is that the basic principle, again, in hitting any of the short shots is first how you make contact with the ball or ground. You can't hit the ground behind the ball or top ball. So controlling where the axis is that you're turning around or where your weight is and having the handle at some degree forward, those two pieces are the basics in controlling where the club's going to hit the ground. So we still start with that basic principle, or you could call it a fundamental, is being able to control the low point in the swing. Otherwise, you couldn't control the distance or the trajectory or the spin on the ball. So we just try and control where a person puts their weight and handle to start off with. Then you might get more sophisticated and add more open club face, move the ball position, add more wrist cock. You could get more and more sophisticated, but the basic motion would be, as we would teach somebody in a full swing, is you've got to control where the club hits the ground first.
Sure, and that's the advantage of keeping the weight on the left side throughout the swing?
Well, there's two centers to it, John, and a lot of people, and what I hear on television say is that it's a single axis or keep all your weight forward. We're measuring the center of the hips and the center of the shoulders. Sometimes people have all their weight forward with their lower body, but their head will be and their torso will be tilted too far to the right. They still have a problem hitting the ground in the right spot. So it's two centers that we're measuring. And even in our full swing, we don't advocate putting all your weight on your front foot unless you're sliced ball. And that could lead to another question. Why would you have your weight forward if you were slicing the ball? And that's because the more forward you are, the further out you potentially can hit a ball. You would never hit across the ball with your weight the furthest forward, or chances are you wouldn't hit across the ball with your weight the furthest forward.
Oh, that's really interesting.
And do you want to add anything to that?
I would just say that I think masses of people, Mike, whenever they begin playing, don't realize how far forward that lower center is supposed to be to hit outward at the ball enough. And I think that I think starting with more weight on the left than they think that they should have simplifies the game, especially in the beginning phases of their development.
Exactly.
There's some really exciting things going on in the world of golf at a global level with the biomechanics and geometry and technology. What do you guys think about all that?
Huge advantage, if you don't mind.
Guys, you're right. There is quite a bit happening in the golf instruction industry. First, the advent of three-dimensional measuring has made it more mainstream on how to measure the way the spine works throughout playing. And that's really the heart of the stack and tilt description, how the spine changes its flex throughout the swing. And I think that the industry has begun to recognize the left tilt on the back that's present on the backswing, that is the heart of the name stack and tilt that's been associated with Mike and I. So I think that what you'll find is the industry moving towards a stack and tilt type description. It's going to be interesting to watch all the industry insiders start to describe the swing and have to account for that, because three-dimensional measuring has revealed it very clearly.
The three-dimensional vests that they have are amazing.
Exactly. And, just for your listener, if a person bends forward like they were going to hit a golf ball, and if they stay bent forward throughout the time and space of their swing, that would move their head back the most on the backswing and forward the most on the follow through and create the slowest possible swing. And once you understand that, then you understand that the spine's flex must change throughout the swing to hit a ball, that the addressed posture is not a static position throughout the swing, that it's changing dynamically throughout the backswing, downswing, impact, and follow through.
So you've both been called some of the hottest teachers in golf by major publications. Can you talk about what it's like to be honored in such a way?
Go ahead, Mike. It's flattering in some regards. I didn't expect quite the criticism from other camps, but it's been flattering. We've gotten to speak at a lot of PGA sections, now actually around the world, and speak to other groups such as the trainers and instructors at TPI this past fall in Orlando. I think there were 500 of them we got to speak in front of. That's like a very nice honor to be looked at that way and have people that want to listen to us talk and describe how we teach. So I think it's been incredible.
So do you get anxiety before you have to stand in front of a group of 500 PGA guys?
I don't think either one of us do. I think it's in our minds, we have some clear thoughts in how we see it, and we have a lot of visual aids when we go and can describe and show people different illustrations of what we're teaching. So I look forward to it. I think it's fun.
Say, too, just in that, Mike, those are some of the most rewarding things that we get to do, are to speak to your peers, to be able to show the work that you put in to your peers. To me, that's one of the most rewarding things we do, and I like to echo what you said, Mike. I look forward to that, so it's something that excites me to do. I wouldn't say that it's something that's nerve-wracking.
A couple weeks ago, after the 2011 Northern Trust Open win by Aaron Baddeley, he's recently had some swing changes, and you know, I know you had said that you have some critics.
We have a lot of critics.
I know that he had gone back to his coach in Australia, Dale Lynch. Last week, I saw a post on PGAtour.com from Travis Fulton. He had a take on Aaron Baddeley's swing. You know, what do you guys think about that?
Andy, can I start with that? Because I know you have a lot to say.
Okay. Well, are you referring to specifically that article, or are you referring to just Aaron's play in general?
I think both, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to start in how that Aaron, there's a number of articles similar to that, and one that just sticks out before this article came out was a year and a half ago, Troy Mattison won the Fries tournament, and the Monday headline was, "Stack and Tilt might not be dead, but it's on life support." And
wow.
Troy Mattison, one of our students, set a tour record while winning the tournament, and we had four players in the top 10. And that's the headline you read.
So I think, Mike,
really,
that reveals that
I think there's
a lot of people, guys who write the articles, are frankly fairly well insulated from the day-to-day workings of what goes on the range at a tournament. And so they pass along whatever, maybe they have one or two sources that they talk to on the tour that they go to for information, and they more or less pass along what they get from their sources. I would say that you rarely see people who write articles on a regular basis doing any sort of research on the tournament. So with Aaron, you know, Mike and I, our work in practice with Aaron, I think, speaks for itself. His record during the time that he spent with us is public. It's pretty well documented for anyone who wants to find it. It's unfortunate that Travis Fulton didn't look very close at the record. If he had, he would have realized that Aaron was 188th in the world when he started with us. He went to 17th in the world over a period of 2 years with no regression. That he went straight up. There was no adjustment period. He went straight up the chart. He went back the next year from 18th to 37th, which is in world ranking measurements not a very big slide. It's about a matter of finishing, you know, fourth and versus finishing 12th or 14th or something like that. And in the course of that, Aaron felt like it was time for him to change coaches. And at that point, his world ranking went from 38th to 302nd for this most recent win. And then he won the tournament in Los Angeles. And the next thing I read on the in some of the articles published about Aaron's performance, that it's in some way a reflection on us when we haven't watched Aaron Baddeley hit a ball in 3 years. So I find that revealing on a number of levels. First, Travis Fulton didn't research his article very well when he states that Aaron dabbled with stack and tilt and then left. Aaron spent 2 years with us and won three tournaments during his time with us and increased his world ranking 150 spots. Upon leaving, the next 2 years, he dropped 250 spots before that win. And somehow, after not watching him hit a ball for 2 years, we're supposed to take blame for that. I think that part of it is not reported accurately, guys. I will say this, that we consider Aaron a friend. He's done a lot for our career. It makes us happy to see him do well.
Definitely.
Yeah, it just puts us this kind of commentary, though, for people who don't research their articles put us in a difficult spot of having to clarify the record without pointing fingers at Aaron.
I think that sometimes people just like to throw things out there to see what kind of reaction they're going to get.
Right, right.
And I think, frankly, most people have spent a number of years now laying out what we teach and describing it in detail.
And then they're put in
and
a position to write
so that,
articles
that's
about
open
it.
For people to debate it and criticize it. When you look at a lot of the other popular instructors and ask somebody what they teach or look for what they teach, it's very difficult to put your finger on it because they really speak vaguely, if at all, about any detail in their instruction.
I'm going to have to cut you short. We have about 1 minute left.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
We have one more issue we'd like to touch on. What's the deal with Sean Foley, Tiger's swing coach, in the stack and tilt method?
Go ahead, Mike. Well, Sean came out on the tour 3 years ago as Stephen Ames' short game coach. When he had time, he would spend it asking questions to Andy and I, and ended up spending time practicing with us and our players or watching. I think he's adopted a number of the things that we advocate, and I don't think he would argue that. Frankly, I think some of the players he's been teaching demonstrate some of these principles better than some of our players. But Andy?
I think that's well said.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for calling into the show, Mike and Andy. For more information, go to stackandtiltgolfswing.com. Thank you so much, guys.
Tune in to Goldie Bounce Golf Live, heard every Sunday night at 6:30 exclusively on 95.9 WATD.